This is the new TC Pride Podcast, episode 79. On location at the Pride 2017 Treader History Pavilion with Treader Collection founder, Gene Treader.
Happy Pride 2017. We are on location at the Treader History Pavilion, and I am here with
Gene Treader.
And so it's an honor to meet you. We were here last year, and we saw this beautiful collection. What can you tell folks about this collection? It seems very popular today.
Well, basically how it got started and what happened is I realized at a point in time that our history was disappearing as fast as we were producing it. You know, we'd have an event and we'd put out flyers and we'd stand outside the bars and hand out flyers, or we'd hand them out in classrooms, you know, at the university or at whatever organization we went to and everything like that. And then the event would come and go, everybody'd crumple up the flyers and throw them away. Well, and being a bit of a historian and into that sort of thing, I realized that our history was disappearing and that nobody would ever know that any of these things ever happened, because gays and lesbians also didn't journal. In other words, we didn't go home at night and say, here's what I did today and here's the people that I saw and, you know, here's what happened and everything like that. So I started collecting and saving the things. And then I was involved in the original Gay Games, which was at that time called the Gay Olympics, and went to San Francisco, where I met a gentleman by the name of Shamie Kramer, who introduced me to Jim Kepner, who was the head of the International Gay and Lesbian Archives out of Los Angeles, and realized that archiving was the way to go. And so I started collecting everything, but I was collecting things with the intention of sending it out to California, because we didn't have an archive here. And eventually I realized, with my own writing and with other people's writing and everything like that, that we needed a lot of those materials here. And so I started collecting them and keeping them here, stopped sending them to California. And eventually, as it worked out, when the programs office at the University of Minnesota got their grant for $600,000 from, I forget the name of the gentleman that passed away and left them the money, they said, well, if we're going to have a program in GLBT studies, then we need a library and archive to back it up. And one of the young women that was in the program's office, actually she was the assistant director at the time, said, well, I know this guy, Gene Treader, who's been collecting all this stuff all this time. Let's go and talk to him and see if he'd donate his collection. Well, they got there and they decided that it was a fairly good collection. And so they brought the library people out from the university and they decided that it was a very good collection. And so we started the negotiations, and eventually I donated the entire collection to the University of Minnesota, and it's grown since then. And, you know, I've always been contributing to it and getting it to grow, and other people now contribute to it and that sort of thing. So it's that's kind of how it got started. Just a tiny part. You're just looking at an exhibit from the collection. The collection is much bigger. You know, there's many thousands and thousands of documents and things from all over the world in about 63, 64 different languages. You know, I mean, we're doing well, and we're always getting wonderful, exciting new things in the collection. I just talked to a gentleman here who used to be the president of FREE, Fight Repression of Erotic Expression, which was the first gay-lesbian organization on the University of Minnesota campus. And not only that, but FREE actually began before Stonewall. So it's a pre-Stonewall organization. And that's kind of how, one of the ways that we historically measure things in gay and lesbian history, at least in the United States, we say, is it pre-Stonewall or is it post-Stonewall, you know? And so, and I was just talking to him, and he said he's got a whole basement full of papers and letters and things from when he was president of FREE, and so we're going to start negotiating with him to donate those things to the collection, and that's kind of how it happens, you know.
And you said it's gotten to the point now where just people from the community are donating things to collection regularly.
Right, right. And that's what we want to have happen. We want that to happen, you know, and occasionally we have to, you know, kind of scrounge around and find the money to buy certain things. I recently bought a couple of German books, very significant. One was from the 1700s, and the other one was just published in 1902, called, and it's in German, but it's called Homosexual Art in China. But it's all written in German, and I got it from a friend who actually lives in Colorado, who came across it and wrote to me and said, would you be interested in this for the collection? And I said, yeah. And so he sent it to me, and I'm paying for the book, and it'll soon be in the collection and available for people to use. You know?
That is amazing. Before we started recording here, you had talked about your history with the Twin Cities Pride organization. You've been involved since very early on.
I was on the first Pride, you know, that was kind of an interesting thing as how that started. Because that was back when Stephen Dean was still alive. And what happened is Chicago Pride, we're talking about 71. Chicago Pride in 1971 decided to make Jack Baker from Minneapolis, who at that time became the first student body president, openly gay student body president, you know, to be elected a student body president, to make him their Grand Marshal for their parade back in 71. Chicago's pride has since kind of diminished and gone down. It isn't as big as it used to be. But a number of us found that kind of offensive, including Steve and, like I said, Carrie Woodward, who now lives in Florida. Steve has since passed away in 1993. And we decided that we wanted to have a pride here, so we started organizing for a 1972 pride. And we did, and within a couple of years, we had a pride. When we started out, it's kind of funny, if I can, a funny anecdote. The very first pride, we had almost 50 people that attended, you know. And we attended Loring Park, and then we walked down street that goes, that's kind of got flowers and trees in the middle of it, and not many cars and buses and things like that. But anyway, so there was about 50 of us that attended the first Pride. A few years ago, we decided that, well, we want to start thinking about the 50th anniversary of Pride here in Minnesota and what we're going to do. So in the History Pavilion, we put out a book that said, if you were at the first Pride and attended the first Pride and everything like that, please give us your name and address so that we can contact you and, you know, talk to you about being involved in the very first Pride. Now, mind you, we know as a fact that there were only about 50 people that attended that very first Pride. 145 people signed the book. Yeah. I mean, it was just... it just shows how this thing has grown and how important it is and how people want to be a part and want to be a part of that history and want to say, hey, I was part of that history, you know, and I was one of the people that did that. You know, so it's really interesting, and it's nice that people want to be that much a part and everything like that. But it's also a little bit humorous to think that, you know, three times the number of people that actually attended signed the book saying, hey, I was there, and I did this, and I did that, and everything like that. So that was kind of fun. But, there were about 50 of us, and we didn't know exactly what was going to happen to us. We were afraid that we could get beaten up. We were afraid that we'd get thrown in jail. See, remember, in those days, it was illegal to be homosexual, and you could... like I say, be thrown in jail or anything like that. So what we decided, our grand plan for that time, is we had a picnic in Loring Park, and we left half the people in Loring Park with money to bail us out of jail if we got arrested, and then the rest of us had our very first gay pride mark going down this avenue. And what we did is we walked down that, we walked all the way to 4th Street, which is where the old NSP Electric Company was, crossed the street, crossed over, back across, and then walked back to Loring Park. And like I say, we walked. It wasn't a big march, and we didn't yell and scream. And, you know, we tried chanting a few times and that, but we also didn't really want to get arrested and thrown in jail and didn't have... You know, we were mostly just kids and didn't have that kind of money to get thrown in jail and have to pay fines and all that kind of stuff. But nothing happened to us because nobody in Minnesota really knew what we were talking about. The lesbians were from Lesbos, and gay meant happy. And they'd kind of look at us and, okay, here's a bunch of kids that want to be happy. So... big deal, you know, and everything like that. And for the most part, they just kind of ignored us, and that was our very first pride. And then, you know, it just went each year from then. And we went from about 50 kids then to now we generally get over 500,000 people each year at Pride. So that's quite a significant increase in less than 50 years, you know, that Pride has grown. And it's, you know, added lots of attractions, and, you know, it was a few years later that we started adding, I mean, there's a lot of changes in it, you know. Now you see all the groups and organizations have tables and, you know, give out, you know, information about their group and all that kind of stuff. In those very, very first years, what we did, that was part of the entertainment. Each one of the groups, the presidents or the CEOs or whatever you wanted to call them in those days, generally it was president and vice president, would get up on stage and they would tell the audience, however big it was, a couple hundred people, about their group and about their organization and what it was doing and what it was for. And they'd say, you know, come and join us and get involved in the gay community and all that sort of stuff, you know. And everybody had their own groups. Stephen Dean organized the Gay Rights Lobby, which was the first attempts to change the laws in Minnesota to get equal rights for gays and lesbians. And that took from 72, 73 until 93. So that took over 20 years, you know. And it was very... very interesting and very productive, and he worked really hard during his lifetime to get it accomplished and everything like that. And it was also, you know, again, there's always a little humor in all these sorts of things. Steve started out with the Gay Rights Lobby, and of course we all called ourselves gay in those days, and there were lesbians, and lesbians didn't mind being called lesbians in those days. But anyway, so Steve, the name of the group was the Gay Rights Lobby. And then Steve picked up and read this book called Take a Lesbian to Lunch. After he read that book, he decided that all of a sudden the group needed to be known as the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, which was perfectly fine, except flash ahead to some 20 years, Steve is writing, you know, basically on his deathbed, writing his autobiography. Steve was one of these people that believed history was to be used. History was a tool, just like a wrench or a hammer, or anything like that. And so in his autobiography, he wrote about the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. He never wrote a word about the Gay Rights Lobby. It was always the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. So he kind of looked like he was this all-encompassing, all-wise, you know, person that had started this organization that was all-inclusive back in those days, you know. And of course, now, here in the cities, it's grown to be, and in Minnesota, it's grown to be the, you know, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, you know, and different groups and everything like that. But it was just very funny. And so when we went to... they had asked me to go over his autobiography and check it and annotate it and everything like that. And I wrote him back and I said, you know, I really I really can in good faith do this because I know that Steve very deliberately wrote this down as the gay and lesbian rights lobby when he knew very well that it was the gay rights lobby and everything like that, and because he wanted people to believe in history and that it was all-encompassing and that it was always good and always perfect, and you know that he had done everything right in his life. And I said, you know, we'd have to put an annotation in the book saying that this is what's happening. And I said, I'm not the person to make these corrections on Stephen. You know, so they got a different person to do, you know, the what you call it on his book. And of course, we have the original, and we have the final copies of his autobiography in the archives. You know, the original that he wrote and the final copies, and that's the kind of thing that we do in the archives, that we save all those things. You know, we have a number of plays by Gore Vidal in there that never got produced, that are just sitting in the archives, you know, that we managed to get and everything like that, and you know, wonderful things like that all through there, and all kinds of unpublished novels, and you know, these little incidents of history. I won't say who, but we've got one person who was a politician and who decided that when he died, he wanted to have a very nice, clean knight on a white shining horse and shining armor. And so he cleaned up all of his papers, all of his letters, everything like that, made them all real nice and neat and clean. And he'd never done anything wrong, you know, and was always good. And then donated his papers to the Minnesota Historical Society. What he didn't realize is at the same time he was doing that, I was saving everything we had from him. Bad letters, good letters, letters from his master from when he was involved in an S&M thing, and all this sort of stuff. And so we've got all this other stuff that doesn't show him to be quite the shining knight and armor riding in on a white horse and everything like that. And so that's the kind of thing that we have in the archives too, you know. That,
so like you mentioned, clearly a lot has changed in that time period. A lot has changed, and throughout the course of this project, we've talked to people who were also involved very early on, and a lot of them have said that they can't believe that so much has changed in their lifetime. Did you ever think that in your lifetime, like, as much would have changed as has changed?
No, absolutely not. And actually, Steve and Dina talked about things like that, and we weren't even sure that we would get equal rights passed in the state of Minnesota in our lifetimes. And we never dreamt of things like gay marriage and the military, you know, the don't ask, don't tell, that would ever become a possibility in our lifetimes. Never dreamt of any of that. That just didn't seem possible, you know. And then to accomplish it in 20 years is a remarkable, remarkable thing. So, you know, it's just unbelievable in a lot of ways. So
thank you so much for your time today, sir. It's been a pleasure meeting you. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking to you again sometime.
Well, thank you for letting me prattle on, and I do that. And anytime you need to use up a lot of time on your podcast, just give me a call. I'm more than happy to chatter on for a long time and take up all kinds of your time.
Well, thank you very much, sir, and of course, happy Pride.
Thank you. Same to you and to all your listeners.
I'm Bex. Hi.
And Cade.
So I walked up to you and you're wearing a flag. Tell me all about your flag.
Well, it's the trans flag, and I just got it. It's my first Pride flag, and I've almost been out for 2 years now, so it's fun.
So you got some Pride wear going on too.
Yeah, I'm gay, which is a lot different from trans, but I have two moms, and they've been super supportive, and they were like, hey, let's let you go to Pride, and it's pretty awesome.
Fantastic. So we've also been educating people a lot about pronouns. I see you have pronoun stickers. Can you maybe tell me a little about your sticker there?
Yes. Well, I go by she, her pronouns. I identify as cisgender, while my friend Cade identifies as transgender, which means he identifies as the opposite gender of which he was assigned at birth.
You're wearing a pronoun sticker too.
Yeah, I have he, him pronouns. I was born female, but I now identify as male, so I use masculine pronouns. We're just hanging out, having a good time, getting free stuff.
Yeah, it's really fun. We're surrounded by incredible individuals, and we met so many awesome people and so many awesome dogs.
Thank you.
Eliza? So the Cheddar Collection is an archive at the University of Minnesota. It's located in Anderson Library on the West Bank. And we have a bunch of materials in the caverns beneath Anderson Library. So if you're interested, you can go contact the curator, go online, look at the catalog. There's just an amazing collection of material down there, all LGBT related, and it's a really incredible place to work.
And it looks like they pulled some stuff out of the archives for this collection here. What's been popular today?
So the exhibit here is basically just a selection of the materials in the archive and research that various people have done over the years. It's a historical exhibit, so it goes by decade from basically throughout the 20th century, and there's also sections on Minnesota history and also lots of content for bisexual communities and trans communities as well.
And you are? What's your name?
I'm Jocelyn. I actually work, I'm the student archive assistant at the university. I've been working there for about 2 years with Lisa, but I've been working a lot with Eliza over the past 2 years that I've been there too. There is a lot of stuff. I think we do have another section on marriage equality, so there's a lot of information about Michael McConnell and Jack Baker in there and overall marriage equality history in the United States. So those are a couple other interesting points in the exhibit today. If you visit the University Library's website, there is going to be a link to the Treader Collection, and you can find our finding aids on there, so specific information about collections. Otherwise, you can visit the University Library's catalog to find specific books and stuff. Thank you.
Anne from Galveston, Texas.
What brought you all the way up here?
Oh, we have friends up here, so we're visiting.
So I've heard that the Pride celebrations in Texas are a little bit different than the ones here.
They're pretty crappy, yeah.
I've heard that. How's this Pride going?
This is really, really awesome here. This is the biggest one I've ever been to, just aside from Tucson, Arizona, and Galveston, Texas, or Houston, Texas. So no protesters around, so that's a plus.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been asking people about their first Pride experience. Do you want to share your first Pride experience?
Sure. My first Pride experience was in Tucson, Arizona at Reed Park Zoo. That's where they have it. It's really, really small. It's like a tiny park. I don't know. I just remember going and hanging out, listening to music, looking at all the booths, just having a good time. Nothing, too special, but somewhere where I felt at home. Nice to be me. Thank you.
Lisa Vicoli. I'm the curator of the Treader Collection in GLBT Studies.
And tell me a little bit about this collection.
The Treader Collection is a comprehensive collection of GLBT material from the Twin Cities, Minnesota, across the United States, and really around the world. We collect internationally with materials in 58 different languages. We have right now about 3,500 linear feet of materials, which means millions and millions of pages of content about the GLBT experience. If you think about studying a community of people and how you would go about doing that, you'd want to know what they wrote about themselves and what other people had written about them, so we have published material. One of the best ways to study a community is newspapers, because that's a very contemporaneous dialogue about what's happening, what's important, what people think about. So we have long runs of both local, national, and international publications, periodicals, journals, newspapers. Again, studying that group of people, you'd want to know how they organize. How do they come together around what important issues around culture, around sports, around spirituality? So we have organizational records. The Minnesota AIDS Project, Twin Cities Pride, Outfront Minnesota, the National Log Cabin Republicans, we have their papers. We have documents from an organization, a GLBT organization in Sri Lanka, because it's not safe for them to have them in Sri Lanka.
Oh, wow.
So we have them at the Treader Collection. And then again, finally, studying that group of people, you'd want to know the experience of individuals, both the famous people and also the average people. So we collect people's individual papers. We have materials from Karen Clark and Alan Spear, Scott Dibble. We have materials from Beth Zemsky and Nancy Manahan and Bob Jansen in Duluth. So we have the material that people collect that talks about their experience. And all of that is available for anyone to use.
And so a lot of times with marginalized communities, a lot of the stuff that is written about them early on is written from someone else's point of view, kind of like you mentioned, right?
That's true, and that's one of the reasons it's so important to have an archive, not just now, but in the years ahead. And it's one of the reasons that it's so important that people in the community give us their material. Because if we as a GLBT community don't document ourselves and don't collect our authentic experiences, they will not be available for people to study and to write about. And then history will be what was in the mainstream newspapers. And we know that doesn't always reflect our experience authentically.
There's the idea of about us, without us.
Yeah, exactly. But it's our responsibility as a community, because as an archive, the vast majority of what we have has been donated. I will never have enough money to buy what we need to have. So we really rely on our partners in the community to say, I have this box of material about when I was involved in the early days of XYZ organization. Don't throw that away. Don't let it sit in your basement where it's going to get moldy. Bring it to the archive. I can preserve it. I can organize it. I can make it accessible to researchers and scholars that want to know what people have worked on.
And so how would people do that? How would people reach out to you if they had some stuff that they think they might want to donate?
Sure. Our contact information is on our website. So Treader Collection, just Google that. Treader Collection at the University of Minnesota Libraries. Find our contact information. Get a hold of me. Say, I've got this information I'd like to bring you. Or contact me and say, I'd like to learn more about. What do you have about Twin Cities Pride? What do you have about the Minnesota AIDS Project? And I'll be happy to talk with you about how you can access materials in the archive.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for putting together this awesome collection here, and hopefully we'll see you again soon. Thank you very much. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride to you.
The TC Pride Podcast is a production of Podletter Media and Twin Cities Pride. Subscribe now on iTunes, on Android, or by email at tcpridepodcast.org. Get above the noise by raising your voice. Podletter Media turns your email newsletter,
blog,
or video content into a more powerful, more personal,
more intimate,
on-demand listening experience. Your podcast.
Your story.
Your voice. Simplified. Amplified. Learn more now at podletter.com.